Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American.
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war. Welcome, my friends, to this edition of Cultural Baggage. My trip to Hartford turned out to be a lot more productive than I had anticipated. Cliff Thornton, one of the organizers, gave a very compelling speech, and I'm very compelled to share it with you at this time.
A couple of months ago, there was an article in the Norwich Bulletin, and it was about the Connecticut Supreme Court Judge Howard Sheinbloom. And he engaged in something that the public servants cannot engage in, and that's candor. The judge asserted, "It can neither be denied nor acknowledged that public policy on drugs doesn't work." Speaking from his 15 years of experience on the bench, Sheinbloom estimated 90% of the criminal cases in Connecticut are connected in some way to the pursuit of illegal drugs. And he asserted that society would be far better off to let users of such drugs obtain them by prescription and to be charged accordingly. That is, the judge said, drugs are not the problem, not the cause of thievery, robbery, or violence. Drug prohibition is the problem. If now illegal drugs were available to addicts by prescription, he said, they wouldn't be robbing and killing others for money for drugs, and drug dealers would not be killing others for drug sales territory. Most violent crime would disappear. Sensible as that might seem, after all, despite drug criminalization, illegal drugs are more prevalent than ever. The legal drugs, alcohol and tobacco, claim so many more lives than illegal drugs, and who really cares about people that waste away their lives and don't hurt others, the judge said. Any departure from feudal drug policy would be blocked by vested interest. For if drug prohibition crime ended, the judge said, Connecticut wouldn't need as many police, judges, courts, prisons, or drug programs. Judge Sheinbloom also said, it has been borne out by the political action of Connecticut's Prison Guards Union against the transfer of inmates to prisons out of state where costs of imprisonment are lower. The families of prisoners have protested as well. But the union didn't care about prisoner welfare. It cared about losing business. The judge also said that the drug war is only meant to be waged, not won. Judge Sheinbloom is one of the courageous judges here in the state. And he said even its racially disproportionate casualties are not enough to prompt politicians to engage in candor. And he said Connecticut politicians are happy to put half of the minority population in prison if the other half will watch them. Consider this. Connecticut has a population of 3.4 million people. Black and Latino males make up less than 6% of that population, but they account for almost 68% of the prison population, with almost 70% of them being there for drug-related charges. If one does not understand racism, classism, white privilege, terrorism, and the war on drugs, what these concepts mean and how these terms work, then everything else you do understand will only confuse you. But right now, I'm going to talk about a journey It's my journey. I was born and raised here in Hartford, Connecticut. Played high school basketball at the field house here. My grandmother was denied an apartment right across the street from here because she was black. I want to talk about a journey from a staunch drug warrior to a kinder, gentler, compassionate, truthful person advocating legalization, medicalization, and decriminalization. This journey began for me in 1963, 2 weeks before I was to graduate high school. One Sunday morning during breakfast, there was a knock at the door. Upon exchanging the usual pleasantries, my grandmother instructed me to accompany the gentleman. He was a police officer, and he took me to a field of abandoned cars. Underneath one of them was the body of a naked woman. She was my mother, who had died from an apparent heroin overdose. Now, there are no words to describe how I felt, but one thought resonated as I came to my senses, and that was, all illegal drugs should be eradicated from the face of the earth. The decades flew by. I watched the civil rights movement take center stage. Onward and upward was the battle cry. I watched the dismantling of the black community as I knew it into an even greater class divide. I watched the findings of President Kennedy's Blue Ribbon Commission on Drugs go unheeded. They said that if the drug problem stayed in the hands of law enforcement, it would make the drug business more profitable, and enforcement would be concentrated in marginalized areas. They determined that drug use is an issue of public health and should be handled that way. I watched President Johnson declare war on poverty and announce the Great Society. I watched as I returned home on leave from the Army to bury my grandmother as race riots raged in my native Hartford, Connecticut. I left one war zone only to return to another where the smell of marijuana was almost as strong as the tear gas. I watched President Nixon declare the war on drugs on January 17, 1971. A few years ago, Dan Baum wrote a book entitled Smoke and Mirrors, which described these events very well. In the diary of H.R. Haldeman, one of Nixon's staff persons, Nixon is quoted as saying, "You have to face the fact. The whole problem is really the blacks. The key is to devise a system that recognizes this while not appearing to." And he said this about the Jewish population. And he's talking to H.R. Haldeman. "You know, it's a funny thing. Every one of those bastards that are out there for legalizing marijuana is Jewish. What the Christ is the matter with the Jews, Bob? What is the matter with them? I suppose it's because most of them are psychiatrists." Go figure. Gil Scott Heron, poet, singer and composer of that time period, came up with a very catchy phrase about Nixon's staff, which went like this: "Haldeman, Ehrlichman, Mitchell, and Dean. It follows a pattern, if you dig what I mean." And over three decades later, with Bush's staff, we have Chertoff, Rumsfeld, Gonzalez, and Rice. Not a damn thing has changed but the rollers of the dice. I watched as the French connection became the Bolivian connection, then the Colombian connection, and later the Afghanistan connection, which will soon become the Uzbekistan connection. I watched the dismantling of the Great Society programs. The war on poverty became a war on the poor. Inner city housing, educational and health programs were replaced by aggressive police tactics. I watched our health, education, economic, and criminal justice system started to falter. I watched as two federal agents came to my place of employment and arrested one of my supervisors for selling drugs. I've known this guy for 10 years. He didn't smoke. He didn't drink. He didn't even have a girlfriend. Unbeknownst to him, he was introduced to a drug dealer. The drug dealer gets busted, and in order for the drug dealer to get leniency, he has to finger X number of people. He's now doing 10 years for bullshit. That next week, September 1997, I could no longer watch and not try and make a difference. I retired early from my job. I have since dedicated my life to ending drug prohibition. Many people ask, why would you want to legalize something that killed your mother? Now this gives me a real opportunity to explain why in very real terms. I can say I watched as drug use and addiction stigmatized her and the crowd that she ran with. I can say I watched as my mother prostituted herself. I can say I watched her sleep all day. I can say I watched her hustle all night. I can say I watched her abandon my three brothers and me. I can say that it took some time to evolve to the state that I am right now, and that drug prohibition killed her. To understand this war and to understand the problem of heroin in particular, one needs to grasp one core fact. Virtually every assertion testified to by the majority of politicians, criminologists, and medical personnel are unsupported by any sound evidence. Indeed, nearly all of it is now directly and entirely contradicted by tons of research from all over the world. The first casualty of this war is the truth, and yet nearly after 9 decades of drug prohibition, this war continues. Shouldn't we be listening to the many voices that are now saying that continuing this war is a grave threat to the long-term health of this nation? Drugs and fear go hand in hand. The war on drugs is frightening, but not in reality for the reasons that are claimed by its generals. The untold truth about this war that has sucked in every country in the developed world is that it creates the very problem which it claims to solve. The entire strategy is a hoax, with the same effect as an Air Force which bombs its own cities instead of its enemies. We have to go to the trenches of the DARE program to find generals who have been so incompetent, so dishonest, so awesomely destructive toward those who they claim to care for. Former Executive Director Glenn Levant said of the studies against DARE, scientists tell you bumblebees can't fly, but we know better. Besides, if we reach only one child, it's worth all the effort. Now, you guys out there that are parents, would you accept the math, English, or geography program that reaches only one child? I don't think so. The core point is that the death, sickness, and the so-called moral collapse, which are associated with such Schedule I drugs, are in truth generally the result not of the drugs themselves, but of the black market in which they are sold as a result of the strategy of drug prohibition. The classic signs of social exclusion among addicts are the product not of their drug, but of the illegality of the drug. If addicts fail to work, it is not because heroin has made them work shy, but because they spend every waking minute of the day hustling. If addicts break the law, it is not because the drug has corrupted their morality, but because they are forced to steal to pay black market prices. If addicts are thin, it is not because the drug has stripped away their flesh, but because they spend every last cent on their habit and have nothing left for food. Over and over again, it is the black market which has been created by the politicians that does the damage. In comparison, the drugs themselves are relatively safe, similar to many legal activities. We could turn around this epidemic of illness, crime, and death if we would only legalize, medicalize, and decriminalize them. we have to repeal this failed second prohibition. The moment the price of illegal drugs plummets, drug profits will collapse, and with them, the drug empires. I advocate regulating drugs, governmental restraints on sales to minors, quality controls to curtail overdose and prosecution of the inevitable bootleggers. Legalization means regulation and control over drugs through state clinics and or stores. I say legalize marijuana outright and tax the hell out of it. Make this available in state stores and also sell tobacco and alcohol out of these stores. These stores would be the only place one could purchase these substances. This would cut the access tremendously for our children. Remove heroin from Schedule 1 to Schedule 2 and allow doctors to prescribe and administer cocaine and heroin to addicts and counsel others who are thinking about using. This could be done in clinics. Using in public would be outlawed, just as drinking alcohol is in most places today. Advertising would strictly be prohibited. Driving, flying, or piloting a vessel under the influence would still be punished. Taxes on marijuana would pay for enforcement, housing, education, rehabilitation, research, jobs, and training. These monies would and should go back into those areas hardest hit by this drug war. After all, it is a problem created and sustained by the very laws themselves. Legalization would lead to an immediate decrease in murders, burglaries, and robberies. Though the spread of powerful weapons in U.S. society and the proliferation of youth gangs have led to an addiction to gun violence that will not soon go away. But many predict drug legalization would cut the illegal gun market in this country in half overnight. Cheap drugs would mean that most addicts would not be driven to crime to support their habit, and that drug lords would no longer have a turf to fight over. Legalization would remove the glamorous Al Capone-type traffickers who are role models for the young, and it would destroy the cool status of drug use. Drug legalization would cancel the corrupting role of drug cartels in South American politics, a powerful incentive to corruption at all levels of our own government, and a dangerous threat to our civil liberties through mistaken enforcement and property confiscation. It would scuttle a multi-billion dollar bureaucracy in this country whose prosperity depends on not solving the drug problem, but perpetuating it. Some people argue that legalization, medicalization, and decriminalization represents a daring and risky experiment. But it is drug prohibition that is the daring and risky experiment. However, it is contemporary heresy to say this. And so the overwhelming evidence of this war's self-destructive futility is exiled from almost all public debate now, just as gay rights, slavery, and segregation once were. Take away the lies and the real danger becomes crystal clear. It's not drugs, but the black market, which is the danger that has been created directly by the policy of drug prohibition. If ever there is a war crimes trial to punish the generals who have gloried in the slaughter of the innocent, these drug warrior culprits should be made to carve out in stone. There is no drug known to man which becomes safer when its production and distribution are handed over to criminals. Anyone who supports our present policy of drug prohibition is directly responsible for this rise in crime. These drugs in our school, these AIDS in our community, and the creation and continuation of vast criminal empires. So many people agree and understand to some extent how bad the war on drugs really is. What I can no longer condone is how these people allow it to continue without actively supporting the reform movement in some way. The mere fact that so many Americans see that the drug war is wrong and say and do nothing is symptomatic of a malady. It is the same thing that enabled slavery and segregation to continue for so long, while so many knew it was atrocious. It is the same thing that enables us to mistreat the homeless. It is the same thing that enabled us to turn a blind eye to domestic violence for centuries. It is apathy caused by fear. Those who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must undergo the fatigue of supporting it for the least fortunate among us. Our problem is not the drug dealers or the drug cartels. They are just opportunists. Our problem is the self-righteous legislators in Washington who, through the policy of drug prohibition, have made these drugs worth more than gold. And the apathetic non-voting public who create the opportunity for those dealers. We need politicians who are so committed to their job that they are willing to lose it to make the right decision. Any politician that is not willing to risk election is not worthy of being elected in the first place. And politicians must realize illegal drugs are like most other businesses. The higher the risk, the higher the potential rewards. If policing is increased or criminal penalties are raised, then the profits taken by the successful drug dealer or trafficker will be hiked also. Drug enforcement only serves as a business incentive, as there will always be men and women desperate enough or bold enough to take on the increased risk. The only thing that is accomplished by arresting a drug dealer or smashing a drug cartel is to create a job vacancy. Let us be realistic. Marijuana, heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine present no threat to me or to anyone else who chooses not to use them. But the illegality of these drugs presents a clear and present danger to everyone. Just ask that 8-year-old in Hartford who was shot in the jaw by a stray bullet a few years ago. Just ask that preacher in Boston where the paramilitary police broke down his door and caused him to have a heart attack. Just ask that Latina mother in Los Angeles where in a pre-dawn raid they killed her 12-year-old son because he didn't move fast enough because he didn't understand English. In both cases, they were in the wrong place. Just ask the tens of thousands of mothers and fathers who have lost their children to this drug war, who had absolutely nothing to do with drugs. In an ideal world, all drugs would be legal, and nobody would use any of them. Legalization of these handful of illegal drugs won't immediately remove the problem of drug abuse or drug addiction. But it will confine that problem to the people who choose to use these drugs. Then, and only then, is when the real work starts to solve the problems of drug abuse and drug addiction. This will make life better for everyone, and it's a reason for everyone to tell our politicians to end the lies, the greed, the hypocrisy, the partisanship, the divisiveness, the corruption, the racism, classism, and cowardice that has characterized America's war on drugs. Legalization now, legalization tomorrow, legalization forever. Thank you.
Cliff Thornton has truly dedicated his life to ending drug prohibition. He travels the world speaking to parliaments or fraternal organizations several hundred times per year. If you would like to learn more about this very courageous individual and the work he does, I would urge you to visit his website, which is efficacy-online.org.
This is Phil Jackson with a Black perspective on the drug war in America. I'd like to thank Dean Becker for allowing me to spend a couple of minutes each week looking at America's insane war on drugs from the point of view of the communities that suffer most from it. Every war has its casualties, and every war has its objectives. The casualties of the drug war are clearly and overwhelmingly people and communities of color. What most don't realize, though, is that those casualties are, in fact, one of the main objectives of the war itself. Over the next few weeks, I intend to draw a picture of a racist attack deliberately waged on America's black and brown-skinned citizens for political, social, and economic gain, to show how America's irrational drug laws have destroyed black families, put guns into the hands of black youth, militarized our neighborhoods, and resurrected slavery here in the land of the free. I intend to show why it is perfectly reasonable, from a black point of view, to conclude that the American government is complicit in this ever-escalating drug trade that swamps our communities with cheaper, more plentiful supplies of drugs. Most importantly, I want to make the case for the only real solution for black America, which is, of course, ending drug prohibition. For the Black Perspective on Cultural Baggage, this is Phil Jackson.
Roundup. Now with Cosmoflux. Responsible for the destruction of 30% of the Amazonian rainforest, more than 1 million Colombian refugees, and millions in profits for Monsanto Laboratories.
Okay, let's say drug prohibition does support terrorism.
And murder.
And murder.
Torture.
And torture.
Corruption. Bribery.
And whatever.
What's your point?
Change the law.
I gotcha. Make it cheap, more available, everywhere, like soda or cheesy puffs.
Exactly.
Cocaine at the playground, crack stands at the laundromat, heroin at the mini mart, like that?
Face it, old man, that's what we've got now.
To learn more, visit the Marijuana Policy Project, MPP.org.
Hi, this is Valerie Corral, and I'm the director of the Women's Alliance for Medical Marijuana, WAM, in Santa Cruz, California. I listen to Cultural Baggage, and obviously you do too. Please support our Constitution and free speech through the Drug Truth Network and Pacifica Radio.
It's time to play Name That Drug by Its Side Effects. Constipation or diarrhea, dizziness, nausea, vomiting, blurred vision, difficulty passing urine, skin rash, itching, yellowing of the skin or eyes, unusual weakness, and fevers. Time's up. The answer, Crestor, another FDA-approved product. Okay, it's time to wrap it up. Next week on both the Cultural Baggage and Century of Lies program, we'll be bringing you reports from the Drug Policy Alliance Conference that's happening, as we speak, out in Long Beach, California. As time goes by, more and more politicians are willing to consider making changes to these drug laws, and they'll consider it that much sooner if you'll dare to contact them and tell them that would be your wish. If you'd like to learn more, please visit our website, endprohibition.org. And as always, I remind you, because of drug prohibition, you don't know what's in that bag. Please, be careful. To the Drug Truth Network listeners around the world, on behalf of engineer Philip Guffey, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage and the Unvarnished Truth. The show produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Tap dancing. On the edge of another.